Good evening. It's nice to see such a nice turnout. I just want to start by expressing my gratitude for this sangha, because without it, I don't think I ever would have gotten the good stuff of the Dharma. And also I want to just talk about my gratitude also for the Sangha Mamas group. There's not a lot of them here, not any. But we meet on every other Sunday, and it's a time when we get together and talk about how the Dharma relates to family life. And that's where I really got introduced to BIMS, and I'm just really grateful for this Sangha, so thank you all for being here. It's also today, I did not plan this, but seems like an auspicious day because it was a solar eclipse, the new moon, and it's International Women's Day, which seems totally appropriate because today I want to talk about Buddhism in the context of bodies and from the viewpoint of a mom and a woman. And so that just feels kind of lucky. I thought I'd start out with that. So putting together this talk after being part of the practice period and really for the first time really diving into the Satipatthana Sutta and the specific practices that the Buddha gives us about mindfulness of the body, another term sort of started popping up for me, and that is the term embodiment. And I remember this excellent book we have in our library. I suggest you all pick it up. It's called Being Bodies, and it's Buddhist Women on the Paradox of Embodiment. So I picked this up and I really appreciated this part in their introduction. We move from having bodies to being bodies. And from that place of inhabiting ourselves completely, we confront the paradox of embodiment. We spend our lives in bodies. And if we realize anything we care to call enlightenment, it's in our bodies. In this book, we wanted to address a tendency we've both observed for spiritual seekers to leave the body behind. From our study of the Dharma, we are clear that the body is not the ultimate truth and that attachment to it causes suffering. But still, we don't simply leap into the realm of the absolute. The absolute is here, we say, in each embodied moment. When we breathe, when we sweat, when we bleed, when we feel desire. Even then, we say, no other time. Yet daily our bodies confirm for us our separation. My intact, enclosing skin bumps up against yours. Our sense perceptions embellish the obvious with elaborate details of how you're like me or not like me. Whether we become enemies or friends, we remain separate, looking out at each other from behind separate eyes. But then there's the mystery. If we stay very still, inhabiting our bodies with the finest degree of awareness, if we don't move away from anything, we may find our edges dissolving into the everything that includes no body. I love that. I thought that'd be a good place to start. So we all begin as not separate in our bodies, but held within the bodies of our mothers, even sharing the same bloodstream. So I have a 5.5-year-old, and we were talking the other day about how babies were born. That was fun. And I explained to him about how the egg gets fertilized and the cells start dividing. And he just looked at me in astonishment like, wait, you mean people made me? It's like my blood, my brains, my bones? I was like, yeah. And it was bedtime, so he lays down. He goes, tomorrow we're going to talk more about this. I was a little scared he hasn't said anything yet. But my practice is really rooted in being a mother and also working with young children. I work with 3 to 5-year-olds. And so I don't really go on retreats or live my Dharma that way. I kind of sneak up here to this little spot in my room. And I love this Buddha I got. He's holding a baby. So that's where my 20 minutes, sometimes 45 minutes meditations happen right there. And since my practice is so around children, what I'm noticing is how they really occupy a fresh, concentrated, joyful mind and body state, similar to the one that the Buddha teaches us is our true nature. And I've also been thinking a lot about the story of Buddha, and working with kids and being a mom, we tell a lot of stories. And there's a really important part of his story where after he studies with these, I think the word is ascetics, who believed in starving the body and kind of the practice of disembodying, he's really emaciated and at this point of, I think, wondering, is this the way I'm going to keep going? And just really at a hard place. And he sits down and he remembers being a child. And it's a moment when he remembers being a prince and his father was beginning a planting ceremony. And I guess the story goes that all of the nurses that were around him left and he was alone, and he actually sat down in the posture and experienced the first jhana of mental absorption. And when he remembers this, he remembers that it's in the body that he's been searching for this end of suffering in all these other places. But in that moment of remembering that place of a child, of being able to look at the world and see that just as I'm here in my body watching whatever's happening, this is it. And it's in that moment that he decides to take nourishment and continue to keep practicing and to reach enlightenment. And that's also when he discovers this middle way between this lavish life of a prince and then this life with difficulty, self-imposed. And so that, I thought, that's really where it is in that moment of childhood. And when you think about other spiritual traditions, childhood still has a really important place. I know Jesus is often quoted as saying, become like little children. So I also notice that because we children have been part of a body, when they come out, and especially preschool, 3 to 5, they're the first time really experiencing the interplay between self and not self. Because when they come, especially around 3, they're freshly separated from their parents. You know, when I had my babies, they were part of me, and then I carried them around a lot, and then they did this push and pull thing. So they're experiencing this thing that we experience all the time, but it's really fresh. I recently got to watch a couple of kids have an argument. Here's one of them yelling. And it was about 2 days after Steve's talk about mindfulness of body parts. And so these two kids were standing, like, looking at each other, one yelling at each other. Their feet are like this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, that's mine. No, this is what it is. And I just sort of stood there and watched them. And then I started pointing out, hey, do you guys have hair on your head? Hey, do you have eyes? Do you have ears? Do you guys have noses? And they both just stopped and stared at me. And they're like, yeah, yeah. And then one little boy's like, and look, I can jump. And the other little girl was like, oh, and I can run. And those two kids played together for like the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And they had the sweetest moments. And I just thought that was such a cool way of experiencing that when we get into that, mine and up in our mind about being separate. And then that body awareness, what happens then, to see then it actually created peace out of this strife. So I thought that was pretty cool. So getting back to the body, I follow this writer, Matt Licata. He has a lovely blog called The Healing Space. So the body is an invitation an entryway into the freedom, love, and vastness that you are. For it is out of this alive, pregnant crucible of potentiality that flow the qualities of kindness, compassion, attunement, and presence. This is what you are. And yet, how often do we forget this? I know that growing up as a little person, kind of at the will and mercy of the people around me, instead of training in embodiment, I didn't have parents who did that. I really learned to disembody and to go up into my mind and think a lot. Do any of you do that? And in fact, that was part of Buddha's path too. He followed this path of disembodiment. And so I think that it's a really natural thing to do, to leave our bodies. Recently I took a meditation class in a really different form, like visualization, and the teacher said that most of us actually do live far outside of our bodies. So I think it's pretty natural. So he follows a path of disembodiment, and then after remembering that he was a child and that there was this moment of joy that he remembered in his body, he chooses embodiment. He chooses to take nourishment from, there's a lot of different stories, but a village girl sees him and sees a starving person and offers him nourishment. And so the Buddha at that point chooses the path of embodiment. So for me, the practices of embodiment that I'm in the Satipatthana Sutta have really given me a real gift of presence, because it's through the body that we actually experience what it's like to be here. So we go up in our minds and we go forward and to the past and all around, but it's our body that stays put and it is still subject to all of the things that is happening here. So for me, that gift of actually being able to stay, these practices have helped me stay and experience the world in a really beautiful way. And it's a real gift to me. About 3 years ago, my son Hank was diagnosed with a disease that they call terminal. And so these practices have really pulled me into saying, hey, I really want to be here. And so it's been a real gift to be able to do that. And it also made me realize that we all have a terminal illness. It's called life. And so when we remember these things, and I think that's one of the reasons, one of the practices is thinking about the decaying bodies, is to remind us that we're all doing that all the time. So if we can get inspired to stay in our bodies and really feel what's happening. I've noticed that we do that mental thing of going to the future and to the past because we're looking for security and solid ground. The Dharma teaches us that the flow of life is constantly shifting and changing, so that, well, the mind is drifting all around. The body's always rooted in the present moment, always on solid ground. So training the mind to stay put in the body is really the only security we have and the only solid ground right here. Can you feel that right now? Let's just pause for a moment. One of the practices I love that has helped me in every day and really staying in my body is the sacred pause, to just take a moment and follow any of those breath. Lately, I like to do this when I'm flossing or brushing my teeth. Just take that and notice, did I go somewhere or am I here? So yeah, I thought it was pretty awesome to think about his story, Buddha's story again, of being in that place of just like being on the brink of death and then choosing to take the food and choosing to walk that path of being in a body. So because I'm a mom and I don't do a lot of going on retreat and it's hard to get away to find those quiet places, I've been focusing on making embodiment my practice. And my children have been just amazing at teaching me that it doesn't have to be hard, but actually joyful and really playful. Here's a quote from a woman named Joan Tollefson. Meditation is returning to that original seeing that is playful and interested in exploring. I love that. Just to remind us that we can play and move around and be still and learn to be curious and playful. So I've been doing a lot of eating with my kids. They're pretty playful that way. So I took a couple kids to go. My son's in the back and my friend Olive, who I've known since she was born. We went all around town and they wanted to go get hot chocolate. So I said, hey, let's go do some hot chocolate meditation. And we wrote down, before we went and ordered, and we wrote down all the like descriptions of whipped cream. And it was really fun. And they were so into it. I've never seen two kids drink hot chocolate that slow. And I took a lot of pictures because I think they're pretty cute. And then we kept walking. And then Dean wanted to do pepperoni meditation. I really like this one. Pema Chodron, she also says, meditation is a process of lightening up, of trusting the basic goodness of what we have and who we are. I think that's pretty good. I think my kids probably pretty appreciate that, because as a mom, especially with one of a mom with a kid with something big sickness, it's really easy to get pretty heavy around the world. So I've been really enjoying that there is that persistence and ardency that is awesome about practicing. And then it's just nice to remember that moments and those moments where it becomes joyful and easy, and that we sit through the difficulties and we sit through the discomfort to remember the other parts of life. Tara Brock says, a relaxed, non-controlling attention that notices and allows is the deepest form of love to our inner life and to each other. And that to me has been the reason that I keep coming back to practice and keep coming to the Dharma Hall. And
would you read that one again?
Mm-hmm.
Please.
I have it on my wall at home. A relaxed, non-controlling attention that notices and allows is the deepest form of love to our inner life and to each other. As a mom, it's really easy to think, oh, I'm here because I'm older and wiser and I have a lot to teach these kids, so I better get busy and we better be serious. But the teachings of the Buddha have reminded me that really it's about noticing and about loving each other. That's why I like that quote and why I have it up in my room. I should probably put it in every room. So another really awesome book I discovered, which only has the word Buddhism in it once, but it's called The Art of Awareness, How Observation Can Transform Your Teaching. Discover a new way to be with children. It's neat because I was reading in Joseph Goldstein's book about mindfulness and really interested in that internal versus external meditation. That was really new for me. And this idea of just taking this backward step and just observing what's happening, much like what happened to Siddhartha when he remembered being a child, of that just watching without trying to change it or fix it or anything. So in this book, the authors say, our lives are enriched and expanded when we pause to appreciate the experience of childhood. So that's what I want to do a little bit of today. So I thought what we would all do is just find a comfortable spot, get ready to have a little moment of silence. So I'll just invite you to close your eyes and root yourself in your body using your breath. And what we're all going to look for is a favorite childhood memory. I realize that we weren't all raised princes, so it might be that mixed in with those favorite ones are some tough ones. But for the purpose of this evening, just invite your mind to find a favorite one, a happy place where you might be able to remember that non-controlling, relaxed attention that notices and allows from a child perspective. So I'll just give you a few moments to invite that in and just listen to see if anything comes up. It might help to remind yourself that maybe you've been disembodied for a while, like Buddha was when his famous memory appeared. And if something arrives, where does this memory take place? What does it look like? What does it smell like? What feelings arise? What does it taste like? And then just take a breath. Wiggle your fingers and your toes and come back. I wish I had some milk pudding for you all, or some cookie now. Hot chocolate, pepperoni. Did anyone get one? Does anyone want to share theirs? Mary.
I was remembering spending time at the pool as a kid, and sometimes now I realize I'm an adult, I go to the pool, and I'm like, what are you supposed to do? When you're a kid, you know, like you just float and get in and out a million times. You know, it's just you're just kind of exploring what it's like to be in the water and different things. So, more embodied than you. And then afterwards, you're that tired, exhausted, walking home. It's
really oh yeah, hungry. Anyone else want to share? Go ahead.
I remember spinning around in the grass in the front lawn and bare feet and the feeling of rich, deep green in the coolness of the grass with the warm sunshine, and then just lying down on the grass and looking at the clouds. How often do I look at clouds now? You know, especially from a horizontal position. I think I did that a few times. You know, it was really, really a pleasant feeling. That the sensations on my feet in the grass, and then the sensations of lying on the cool grass when it was otherwise fairly warm, and those white puffy clouds that you could see whatever into it. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Jeannie.
I was thinking about this. It was easy for me to recall because I'm getting excited about seeing some of my siblings in the summertime. And my oldest brother is 14 years older than me. So I have this memory of in the summer, one summer I was about 3, and my dad and 4 of my brothers built this amazing tree house in our trees. And it was literally like a 10x12 room in these 2 trees. And so I was about 3, and the front of the treehouse had a porch or a ledge, and my oldest brother would say, "Climb up there and jump to me." And, you know, it was probably 8 feet high, and I was 3, and I would do anything if he said, because I loved him so dearly. And I can remember over and over climbing up and just leaping to him, and that thrill in your belly, where just like you're laughing and tickles all the way. And I was remembering that because that's kind of how I feel about seeing him, because I haven't seen him for a while. And it's just that tickle in your belly. I feel that when I swing. I love that feeling.
I just like watching you all smile and giggle and just thinking about being a kid. Does that. I just love that picture. Well, I only have a few final thoughts left, which is, I just really think it's really key that the remembrance of childhood and that joy in the body leads him to choose nourishment in the path of enlightenment and embodiment. And so that's the Buddha story has really been inspiring me just time and time again to return to that fresh mind of my children. And I notice in parenting circles a lot, people focus more on like what my kids are going to be like in 10 years and will they get everything? And kind of like my job as a mom. And I just keep thinking that the more I follow this path, the more that it seems to me that they might just be here to remind me of my true nature, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. And so as we end our practice period, I just hope that we're all able to remember the joyfulness and freshness of clear seeing, and that as we leave and continue our practice outside, that we can each, like Buddha, walk. We have these memories now, and we can walk out and we can be choosing the path that he chose of embodiment, of clear seeing, of truth, of compassion, of beauty. This quote pretty much sums it up. "Let me remember that my Buddha nature is drenched in flesh." Susan Moon.
Oh, Susan Moon.
Actually, she has a wonderful quote. I should really read you this, the whole quote. We have a little time. It's so good. Let me find it here. 2:23, okay. She says this, "But I don't want to have a body anymore. I want to be it. I don't want to carry it around. I don't want to look out through it as if chinks in a wall. I don't want it to be my pimp to send it out looking for people to bring home to love me. I don't want to dress it up like a doll to show to my friends. I don't want to treat it like an enemy soldier when it causes me pain and fight back with chemical warfare. I don't want to lie in bed trembling and alone beside it, as if beside a sullen lover who refuses to be cheered. I'm tired of having a body. I just want to be my body. Not be in it, not be over here, relating to my body over there. Let me remember that my Buddha nature is drenched in flesh.
That's wonderful.
It's in our library. So, not a whole hour, but hey, I'm tired. So. The 5-year-old wakes up cuddling, and it's a sport. So, thank you for your attention.
Thank you.